Then I'd like to speak for about 15 or 20 minutes on my experience in India. Well, I could talk for 15 hours. And then we will get into our second course, which is on the history of the Catholic Church. Now, first of all, I almost did not get to India because I left on January the 7th from the Metro Airport, and I was on a plane, TWA flight to New York. Called it plane, every seat occupied. We were told to get off the plane because no flights were landing in New York or leaving New York because of the weather. Came back to Detroit, to the airport, and they told me the earliest I could get out would be in maybe 1 week, and not even sure because of the reservations already taken. You know, with God's providence, I did manage, with the help of one of the KLM officials. I asked Mother Teresa to write him a little note of thanks, so she did, to thank him for getting me to India. It's about 28 hours, a straight flight, 28 hours from Calcutta to Detroit. The impression that I got were more than just impressions, because for some 30 years I have been teaching the non-Christian religions, and quite a few of my students, correspondent education from the university in Chicago, have been people in India. Also, over the years, I taught some 30 of my own Jesuits from India. Then my great ambition was to go to India as a missionary. I was told I couldn't go because of my poor health. So 50 years later, I spent 3 weeks. I went there for two reasons. One, of course, was to further organize the teaching of the Missionaries of Charity that I've been involved in now for 17 years. There are now around 3,400 members in the Missionaries of Charity throughout the world, and this year they have 500 novices. 500 novices. So my immediate and main reason was to organize a teaching program, which has been mainly verbal until some years ago, traveling different parts of the country or different countries. But then some 7 years ago, we organized an international home education program for studying the faith. And by now, I'd say most of the sisters of Mother Teresa have at least got involved in the course, and the older ones, of course, finished the program. But then, what I also had done was to write what amounts to 4 volumes of explanations of the questions which they were being asked. The explanations of those 2,000-plus questions are now being published, and they will be available then for all the 500-some houses of the Mother Teresa sisters throughout the world. In the meantime, however, one of the purposes was to open the door to the teaching of the faith through the media, correspondence, radio, computer, recording, television. And Matt, Mother, and I spent quite some time discussing, because among the dominant, not just impressions, but conclusion that I came to, were first that the Church's missionary work has been badly damaged by erroneous ideas now in missiology as we're reading and studying in Catholic morality. And among the errors, of course, is the cliche that we are not to convert these Muslims or Hindus into becoming Catholics. Let them be good Hindus, good Muslims, good Buddhists. Karl Rahner, as you may know, was one of the, shall I say, evil geniuses behind that kind of thinking. As a result, the mission work in countries like India, and India is surely a mission country, has been and is being heavily damaged. For example, I was informed, and I made my business to, get all the information I could while I was there. I was informed that the government has hired one of the outstanding Catholic priest teachers and media men to defend contraception on national India television, where the average audience is 100 million. And you see what that does. Given the media, what can a missionary, as we say, somewhere in the wilds of the country, even if he does somehow get across sound Catholic teaching, if that same person comes into the cities or comes to know those who are more literate, that person's faith can be not distorted, at least badly damaged. So that the errors now in missiology have deeply and badly, adversely affected the church's mission work. Again, what I found out, though I knew about it, but to get it firsthand and to see its effects right there, is that the government in India has, I would call it, a stranglehold on education. So the result is that, for example, you dare not teach the Catholic faith to those, say, who are not Christians or Catholics. Forbidden by law. And historically, the main person responsible for that was Mahatma Gandhi. And as we were also saying regarding morality, you just don't judge a person's moral character by somewhat slender line of his behavior or conduct. For example, we have a Jesuit college in Calcutta. It's called a college, but takes students from early grammar school years up to the equivalent of a third year in college in the States. They may not teach 1 hour of Catholic religion. Forbidden by the law. Well, in that connection, after I'd heard that from different sources, and towards the end of my stay, Mother Teresa asked me to speak to the whole community for about an hour one evening just on faith. And then she asked if I'd speak the following morning to the lay volunteers that come. I would see the average is around 50 to 70 always from all parts of the world in Calcutta working with these sisters. So I did. I spoke on faith. I'm not sure Mother Teresa expected this, but I gave my talk a double title. Faith, the foundation of charity, and charity, the witness of faith. And I explained that before you talk about charity, you better know what kind of charity you are identifying. There is charity in general, or there is Christian charity. And for that, you must have the faith. And then I further said that insofar as those who have the true faith, if they have it, they will witness to their faith by practicing authentic Christian charity. Well, what I learned is that so many people say come to India to practice, let's call it charity. And the needs are mind-boggling. There are not just one, but a number of homes for different needs that the sisters are going to meet. This is just in the city. In the city of Calcutta, for example, 6 homes for the dying. And now we say that casually, homes for the dying. Well, these are people picked up on the streets, or somebody, well, goes in search because they go in search of such people. And there they are, all on cots, each one to him or herself, men separated from the women. But they're all dying. And when you compare that to the United States, these are dying people. Medication? Where is it? And after a while, yet it just becomes so. That's the right word. So, inured to the pain, it's just, it's agonizing, but there they are. Then, see, there are so many homeless, starving people. And among those then whom the sisters get to help in those homes for the dying are those who just spend their time all day and far into the night making coffins. And benefactors contribute, well, planks of wood, different sizes, plain wooden coffins, or a pile of coffins, waiting for those who will die to be buried. Then homes for infants. And they would be under the age of 1. Same thing. Abandoned. First time that I've seen unsuccessful abortions. Child survived. There it is alive. But you can imagine what condition those children are in. And then for the infants, the sisters try to get some more competent help so it wouldn't be just casual lay volunteers, because those children can be in any condition physically. And of course, those who take charge of those babies, even to know or be able to recognize what possible sickness they may have or what their needs are. And so then a company donated their abandoned factory to the missionaries of charity. Perhaps 2 or 3 acres of building space. every square foot covered with people. Again, homeless, hungry, and then I visited, well, other places where they were taking care of people with certain disabilities. But all I can tell you is, once you've been there and you come to a country like the United States, and I mean this from the depths of my heart, we are living in a dream world. There are 800 million people. Among them, I saw some, and I was told about others, are many who are, even by American standards, well-to-do. But the majority are destitute. And consequently, the needs of these people are so great, so constant. I may have on some occasion mentioned to you the figures as far as the American Congress could come up with a figure reported in our Congress about the number of people in a given month who die of starvation or malnutrition in India every month. The average in that statistics was 100,000 a month. But the one thing that hit me every time I walked out of the streets, especially in the later evening and early morning, I had mass at the monastery, the mother house, at 6 in the morning. I either can celebrate mass with other priests or be the only celebrant. And, I'd have about a four block walk from where I was staying to the mother house. And there, people lying on the streets, on the sidewalks, and covered with rags of burlap, and you're never sure whether they're alive or dead. And then, because Calcutta does have its wealthy section too, but the people there, as I said, those who are, I won't even say well-to-do, and walking in the streets, you know, matrons were there. They call it sari, is that what they call it? A sari. And beautiful color. So they just, in fact, they're animals too, but they'd be just walking over these bodies like they were animals. And early in the morning, or even very late at night, and you really have to walk on the street because so many of these bodies are on the sidewalks, and you don't want, especially at night, step unnecessarily on a human body. Well, when you see that firsthand and realize that behind it, if I can use that term, behind it is a philosophy. And that philosophy, in academic circles, we call non-Christian. What a platitude. What a platitude. In other words, and it's very much in context with our reflections on Christian morality. Those who don't have the truth of our faith, how can you expect them to respect human life? And even the theory, as it's called, of reincarnation. Oh, reincarnation. Having been there, I want to shout. reincarnation, what it means is, it is simply on principle an ideological desecration of the human person. Because their belief tells them that no single individual is, as we believe, a child that was conceived, born, lived for a number of years, the body dies, but the soul lives on. It is no surprise whatsoever when you come to the States that you have such widespread and wanton murder of the unborn. It is Christianity, and only Christianity, and only Christianity that recognizes the dignity and sanctity of the human person. Well, during the seminars which I gave, both group of 60 of the sisters, first was to the tertians who were awaiting their last vows, and the second group was of the juniors. They were on the first vows, but not all that could be rounded up in Calcutta were brought. And, I had 6 hours, a formal class every day, 6 hours. And believe me, they kept me busy. Because besides that, I had other things. I had conferences. I had confessions. My day began at 6 in the morning and finished at 7 in the evening. 13-hour day every day. Some dominant impressions. First of all, to repeat what I said before, you have to be in a non-Christian culture where Christianity is, you might say, prohibited by law. To begin to appreciate the treasure of our faith. And how, what word shall I use? Zealous is too mild. Militant. We should be to protect our faith. Allow no scoundrel, no matter what his position may be, I use the word scoundrel advisedly, to deprive anybody of this true faith, because in doing that, what you're doing, you're just, you are thereby de-Christianizing a society, in other words, paganizing. In other words, making that society inhuman in its treatment of human beings. One thing that I discussed at some length with Mother Teresa and with others too, of what can be done and even should be done to convert India to the Catholic faith. And I'm told, usually when the full chapel was, filled, maybe 400, 450 in chapel. No seats, of course, either kneeling or squatting as they do there. I told them, it is a shame. That's a disgrace. And even though I say it here in India, I don't mean just, we even mainly, you people in India, that 19 centuries after Thomas the Apostle came to India, less than 2% of India should even be nominally Christian. That's a scandal. And I said, there's one remedy. It's what it was in the early church and has to be today. India needs martyrs. So one day during class, I came back to the subject. How many of you sisters in class want to be martyrs? Well, 10 hands went up. How many want to be martyrs? Another 10 showed up. How many will pray for martyrdom? I don't think I got them all to put up their hands. But behind the martyrdom, as I told them, and made sure that Mother Teresa was also there when I said certain things. Can you imagine St. Paul? Just imagine St. Paul not proclaiming Christ because the Roman Empire was against Christianity. Oh, what a blink. So what? Tell me something new. But then, I thought I would share this with you too. It's a disgrace. The condition of the Catholic Church in our country is a scandal. And what aggravates the scandal, as it does in India, is of the very ones who should be, well, witnesses to the best of Christian morality are counter-witnesses living dissolute lives. As Ajit said back in the 16th century, there's only one obstacle to converting India. And he baptized 100,000 people with his own hands in the 10 years that he survived. It killed him. My main obstacle converting India is the conduct of so many Catholics, especially among bishops, priests, and religious. Amen. Amen. So, and I was going to speak for 15 minutes, wasn't I? Well, of course, I could say much more, but I think I will go on to our class. First of all, you should all have a copy of that IQ Church History quiz. I repeat, must be for the fourth time. Take the quiz, sign it, turn it in. I will return it, by the way, with your grade. For your growth and humility. But it's both informative and useful for me to know what I should stress, because we're dealing this semester with 1,500 years of Christian history. First then, to read, and read, I would say religiously, read the pages assigned. Most Catholics have only, if that, a bird's eye knowledge of the history of the Church. What I thought I would do today, before you even have all the books in your hands, I think I would give you some reasons why the knowledge of the Church's history is not only important or valuable, but I would even say necessary. I've numbered my reasons. I'd like to save some time for questions. What time do you finish class? Is it 4? 4:15. Let me then go for about a half an hour. Are these all the questions, or are there some more questions? Are there more there? Okay. I may not go through all of these. Go for, tell them about a quarter of four. Then I can pick up with where I've left off and then also answer some of the questions. Thank you. Reasons why the study of the Catholic Church's history is so necessary for a Catholic. First of all, to really be convinced of the Church's credibility. You know what credibility means? Credibility means a rational foundation for believing that something is true. The rational foundation for believing that the Catholic Church is true.